Opie clapped his hands. The lights in the room came on, and the holographic jungle around us disappeared. The real plants remained, although they looked a lot less ominous under the new lights. The jungle became a living room, and a very nice one at that, with some overstuffed anti-grav sectional sofas and a couple of gorilla-sized reclining chairs.
A joke, Zach! Oh, I never get tired of scaring the bejesus out of first-time visitors. You should have seen the look on your face when I dropped on you. I think I even scared the hologram!
That was a pre-programmed facial response. It was not reflective of any underlying emotions.
Whatever. Your mouth was open and your eyes were wide. That's good enough. Of course, then Zach went all 20th century on me and started hitting. That sort of ruined the rest. I didn't even get to use my favorite line. Get your hands off me, you damn dirty human! Of course, no one ever gets that joke, but I thought you might.
I stared at Opie as he pulled some clothes out of a simulacrum tree stump and began dressing.
I should shoot you right now. I should switch to full power and atomize you where you stand.
Opie pulled a large sweatshirt over his head and smiled and shrugged his shoulders.
An ape's gotta have a hobby. I have this thing for practical jokes. Dr. Thompson thought it was a byproduct of his genetically altering my mind to an advanced plateau. You know how evolutionary thought goes. It starts with fight or flight, then goes to social interaction, communication, utilization of rudimentary tools. The next step, apparently, is crude humor. Go figure. By the way, you're standing in a pile of my dung.
What?
Gotcha!
I knew I should have brought a banana.
Ugh, I hate bananas. Unless they're thinly sliced and fried with peanut butter. How about a beer?
A beer?
Some German brand. I'm told it's very expensive. They say the head is so thick you can float a bottle cap on it.
He reached into the trunk of another tree and pulled out two brown bottles of beer.
At least that's what I'm told. I'm not quite sure what a bottle cap is, though.
It's a small piece of metal they used to use to seal bottled drinks, before electromagnetic freshness seals.
Sheesh, what a waste of metal.
Yeah, well, it was a different age. Thanks.
I took the bottle from his giant hand and felt the wet chill of the glass beneath my fingers. A welcome sensation indeed.
So, I assumed that you knew I was coming.
The computer told me you'd be dropping by. It knows I like to surprise people. The computer seems especially fond of you, Harv. It says you tell quite a story.
That's true, but I'm only as good as my source material.
Opie gestured toward the other recliner, offering me a seat.
You must also know, then, that Ona's hired me to find Forrest Killer. So I was wondering...
Oh, Zach, control yourself! And they call me an animal!
Whoopee cushion. Very original, Opie.
Oh, it's all nanotechnology. All the furniture's outfitted with them. My butt's the only one that won't set them off. You should have been here the last time I did a live interview.
He pressed a button on the arm of the chair, and a bowl full of nacho chips popped up from the floor.
Have some if you like. Your chair's set for onion rings, I think.
Thanks. So you know about Fora being murdered last night?
Oh, yeah, I cried all morning. The computer finally coaxed me out of the funk by telling me that you were coming. I guess I thought a good joke would cheer me up.
So you're distraught over Fora's death?
Well, it's always very hard for a pet when it outlives its master. It's unnatural, you know what I mean?
Actually, no.
The quads took good care of me when they were kids.
Even though you were older?
I was older, but I'm a gorilla. These kids were geniuses. Like I said, I was their pet.
Were they good owners?
Oh, they were lovely girls. Bright-eyed, friendly, and full of wonder. They were precocious, of course, and rambunctious at times, I admit. But they all had hearts...
Filled with love for everyone and everything they met. Yeah, I've heard that speech before, Opie.
Yeah. I think that's one of the W's. I went off script a bit with the rambunctious part. It just felt right.
It sounded very natural, but it's worthless to me.
Gotcha. Truthfully, what can I say? The claws were weird. They were rude, they were sometimes dangerous.
Dangerous?
When she was 4 years old, Ona carried a special little purse to school with her every morning for a project. She was barely having trouble with some of the school administrators. When Dr. Thompson finally got around to examining the contents of the purse, he found a homemade death ray and a quantum spatial neutralizer inside.
What's a quantum spatial neutralizer?
How did I know? I'm a gorilla. Sounds impressive, though.
Where did she get it?
Oh, she made it out of spare parts that she found around the house. All the quads are like that. They're strange and brilliant, and just when you start to get comfortable with their peculiarities, they whip a quantum something or other out of their purse and all bets are off.
What about Fora?
She was as strange and brilliant as the others. Maybe a little more shy.
Shy?
Well, relatively speaking, of course. And rebellious.
Did she have any enemies?
Well, there isn't a... I suppose you've already heard the "there isn't a person alive who hasn't at one time or another wanted to see them dead" speech, huh?
Yeah, I have.
Well, I'll spare you that one then. But it's true. All I can tell you is that Fora was always civil to me. She actually gave me a nice hug when she arrived yesterday. As a matter of fact, that was the last time I saw her alive.
What about W?
Oh, Fora hated W.
Really?
Oh, Gates, yes. In her eyes, he was the embodiment of bourgeois evils of the world. She always made a big show of refusing to let him serve her. W, of course, took her refusal to be served as an insult to his dignity and duty. And the two of them would just butt heads forever.
They argued?
Oh, it was terrible. Fora always insisted on using the wrong forks, you know. It drove W crazy. He scolded her about it once when she was 10, but she zapped his mind and made him do the freaky geeky for hours. Well, after that, he sort of left her alone.
So they didn't have any contact?
No, there was plenty of contact. It's just that W didn't argue with her anymore.
He became even more subservient.
Funny, isn't it? Fora enjoyed browbeating him, I think. I was out and about the residence yesterday afternoon and saw her berating him after she arrived. For old time's sake, I guess.
She argued with him yesterday.
Fora said a few things. W cringed. They cast a few angry glances at one another. That sort of thing.
Could you hear what they were saying?
Nah, I was too far away. And I think they were whispering. The computer might know. It tends to see and hear most things that go on around here.
Yeah, but it's not always very forthcoming with that information.
Oh, you've discovered that, have you? I guess we all have our secrets.
Well, the only secret I'm looking to uncover is who killed Fora.
Be careful what you wish for, Zach. The one bit of advice I can give you is that nothing ever goes as expected when you're dealing with the quads.
Believe me, Opie, I'm finding that out in spades.
I took one last pull on my beer, then climbed out of the gorilla-sized recliner, which wasn't easy.
Thanks for the beer.
Come back anytime, Zach.
He offered me his hand. I just may do that, Opie. You know, I think you may be the sanest one of this whole bunch. I wrenched my hand away and jumped back, almost falling to the floor as I backed away. Opie held up his hand to reveal a gigantic joy buzzer.
Supersized and personalized.
I looked down at my palm. A picture of a grinning gorilla had been lightly burned into the flesh. It wasn't deep enough to be a permanent scar, but it would certainly be sore for a few days.
I guess sanest was too strong a word.
I shook my head as Harv and I left the room. Maybe I should have shot him.
I thought that went well.
Oh, yeah. It's always nice when somebody tries to kill me before they even talk to me. It really breaks the ice.
The situation was hardly life-threatening. I've seen you in greater danger from cocktail waitresses.
Maybe so, but I still didn't like it.
Lucky for you that you have me to counter his jokes with technology.
Yeah, lucky me. I have a computer hooked to my brain who sticks things in there without my permission.
I thought I was doing you a favor. You should be thankful.
You reprogram my brain without my knowing, and you expect me to thank you for it?
I didn't reprogram. I added and improved a little. Kind of like upgrading from Zach 1.0 to Zach 1.01.
The mind is sacred, Harv. Reprogramming it or probing it too deeply or adding to it is a violation of a person's right to privacy.
How is what I did different from what Carol or any Psy does all the time?
Let's not go there.
Why not?
Because it's morally ambiguous and I don't want to let you off the hook because of that. And where's Ona's computer? Are we going the right way?
Oh, please.
Harv turned right, and we entered the medieval weaponry hallway again.
Honestly, I don't understand why you're so angry over a simple combat subroutine. I thought you liked that Bruce Lee person.
Well, of course I like Bruce Lee. Who doesn't? But that's not the point. Wait a minute. What about Bruce Lee?
The combat moves in the subroutine were designed to mimic his movements.
You based the moves I did on Bruce Lee?
I had to get them from somewhere. I found them in an old vid.
Which vid?
Enter the Dragon.
Enter the Dragon? Are you telling me that the moves I did are the same moves that Bruce Lee did in Enter the Dragon?
Well, not exactly. Your muscles aren't as strong or as limber as his, so you didn't jump quite as high or hit quite as hard. But they were identical in their essence.
Wow.
It's not so bad now, is it?
It's morally ambiguous.
What does that mean?
It means I'm gonna have to think about it more.
I suggest you think about it later.
Why is that?
Because that suit of armor is about to attack you.
I turned around just in time to see one of the supposedly empty suits of armor swing a meter-long iron mace at my head. I spun away as the mace missed me by a chip's width. It crashed into a display case, sending decorative glass and medieval hand weapons tumbling to the floor.
What the tweet?
The suit of armor swung again, missing me only because I was still stumbling backward. The mace hit another display case.
Alert owner's computer. Let it know that Dr. Thompson's old research project is trying to kill me.
Already done. Although I don't think I was able to properly capture the sarcasm of your inflection. Perhaps this is another of Opie's jokes?
I flicked my wrist and popped my gun into my hand.
If this is a joke, I'm gonna personally stick the punchline up his ass.
The energy blast from my gun didn't blow the armor to shreds as I'd expected. Instead, the blast bounced off the breastplate and ricocheted off the ceiling and floor like a rubber ball from a cannon.
Look out!
The two of us dropped to the floor, Harf's hologram doing so more out of sympathy for me than necessity, as the blast passed over us and continued down the hallway, dissipating as it went.
It appears that the armor is equipped with a blaster-repellent surface. Someone or something has clearly tampered with that armor.
You think? So my gun is useless against this thing?
So it would seem.
The armor hefted its giant mace again and moved menacingly toward me. I scrambled to my feet and grabbed a sword that had fallen from one of the broken display kits.
Okay. Access that combat subroutine again. I'm gonna need some Bruce Lee moves. On three. One, two...
Balls.
The armor lunged, swinging wildly. For the briefest of nanos, it left itself vulnerable.
Three!
I leapt into the air with sword in hand.
Ah!
Unfortunately, this time, I didn't move like Bruce Lee.
Just for the record, that part where I yelled three was your cue to activate the subroutine.
The armor kicked me in the ribs, and I rolled across the hallway, half from the force of the blow, and half to put some distance between us. I came up in a crouch and grabbed a shield from the shattered display case.
I tried to warn you. Once the subroutine is moved into your temporary memory for usage, it is erased to save space. It works only once per download. I'll need to reload it into your subconscious when you're sleeping.
What, you couldn't give me more than one subroutine?
I wanted to do a trial run first, to make sure there would be no complications or side effects.
Great. You know what? Putting subroutines in my head is no longer morally ambiguous. It's now officially a stupid idea, and is forbidden in perpetuity.
We can discuss the matter later, provided, of course, you survive this attack.
The armor came at me again. I lifted the shield. And the impact of the mace against the metal made my arm go numb.
Scan the armor. Is anything organic inside?
No organic matter or independent thought. It's a droid skeleton using a pre-programmed combat routine.
Good. At least I don't have to worry about civilian casualties, other than my own.
Well, if you have a plan of action, I suggest you implement it soon. You're about to get more unwelcome company.
As if on cue, three more suits of armor stepped off their pedestals on the far wall and brandished their weapons.
Oh, good. I don't suppose you have any hints on medieval hand-to-hand combat.
The strategy at the time was to hit hard and run away. Admittedly, however, it wasn't very effective when one was outnumbered 4-1.
Then I caught a glimpse of the one still unbroken display case a few meters away, and I got an idea.
Huh.
Thank you, Harv.
Pardon me?
I grabbed a mace from the floor and tossed it at the lower legs of the first attacker. The armor tripped over the mace and fell to the ground. I hopped over the stunned armor/android and ran to the display case. I slammed the butt of my gun into the decorative glass.
Aren't there enough weapons for you on the floor already?
Those are ordinary weapons. I'm looking for something of an ultimate nature.
And I triumphantly pulled an English longbow and arrows from the case.
So you were paying attention after all.
Well, you never know when a supercomputer's gonna say something useful.
I tried to string the bow quickly as the first suit of armor rose to its feet. The bow was stiff and the string felt a little brittle. For a nano, I thought it would snap.
Wedge the bottom of the bow against your foot. It will give you more leverage to bend.
This would have been so much easier if the doc was a fan of the crossbow.
Yes, well, with luck, maybe the next time killer blaster-proof robots try to kill you, there will be a crossbow around. For now, though, I suggest you make do.
Got it!
I notched an arrow and aimed at the now charging suit of armor.
I don't suppose you've loaded any Errol Flynn subroutines into my head, have you?
Sorry.
I watched it skewer the charging armor through the thigh plate and go right through. From this close, the bow and arrow had more power than a Magnum 44. As sparks flew, the armor spun around from the force of the blow and staggered sideways.
Good shot.
I was aiming for the head, but I think I'm getting the hang of this.
fired three more arrows at the other attacking armor suits. The droids wavered a bit, but continued to approach me. Now that they have a few chinks in their armor,
so to speak,
let's put them down for good. I popped my gun back into hand and activated the special features with a voice command. Big boom, tight tight. Art, you'll need to steer.
Got your balls.
I aimed at the nearest suit of armor. The blast from my gun this time was small and hit the arrow hole dead on. The bulk of the energy slipped past the shielded surface and into the droid innards like an angry sea through a breached hull, and the armor shook wildly as the blast bounced around inside, melting everything in its path. When the armor shell couldn't take it anymore, it simply blew apart. Then I neatly repeated the process. Make a note, Harv. In the future, let's stay away from any ominously decorated hallways.
Where's the fun in that, boss?
We contacted Ona's computer, who contacted Ona, who apologized for the rude way I'd been treated by the furnishings. A squad of maintenance bots set to work repairing the damage to the hallway, and a medical droid patched up my countless contusions and assorted abrasions, none of which were serious. I asked Ona to put the remnants of the robotic suits of armor somewhere safe for further examination, but I grabbed one of the gloves to take with me before I left. Unfortunately, no one had any ideas as to who was responsible for souping up the suits of armor, and more importantly, for sending them after me. I, of course, had my suspicions, but those had to wait for the time being because my day was fast filling up. I made a few calls.
How goes the investigation, Zach?
Not bad. So far, I've been attacked by an ape and some 13th century armor.
Nice to know you're not losing your touch. You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Do you want to file a report on, I don't know, the ape or the armor, did you say?
Nah, it's okay. I'll look into it and let you know if it leads anywhere. Anything new at your end?
I had some uniforms deliver samples of the wine to Randy's lab, as we agreed. He should be running tests now. Not that I think he'll find anything.
Trust me, if there's anything to be found, Randy will find it. Of course, then he'll probably drop it and break it, but that's beside the point.
Oh, you're doing wonders for my mood, Zach. One other thing. The nymph we found at the crime scene?
What about her?
She's fading.
She's what?
She's fading fast. I think we're losing her.
Isn't she already dead?
I don't mean dying fading. I mean fading as in fading away. She's dissolving. She's becoming less tangible. She is ceasing to be.
Any idea why?
Maybe that's what happens to nymphs when they die. We're documenting her every way possible so that we have an evidentiary record if she just, you know, disappears. But no one knows how to reconform a decaying nymph. Until Thria showed up with him one day, there's no official record of anyone ever actually having seen one.
You know, Tony, you're taking this all pretty well.
I'm growing accustomed to living with the absurd.
Call number two. Randy, hi. How's it going?
Outstanding, Zach.
Randy is tall, thin, and pale, with a shock of red hair on his head that seems to have a life of its own. His arms are gangly and his fingers are so long that they frighten small children. Those fingers have amazing dexterity, though, which, coupled with his utterly brilliant mind, makes him a whiz at all things involving micro and nano circuitry. Unfortunately, every bit of dexterity and coordination that fate gave Randy ended up in those long fingers. The rest of him is one big rolling chaos storm of clumsiness, so I've learned not to startle him when I call or visit.
It seems that I've been conscripted for some freelance forensic work on a murder investigation.
I kind of promised them that you do that.
And best of all, they tell me that this work is all pro bono. My services have been graciously donated to the department by my dear, dear friend, Zachary Nixon Johnson.
Well, it is important.
You owe me 1 billion credits, Zach.
Randy?
You can pay me in monthly installments if you like, but I'll have to charge your interest.
Your lab's on fire.
Don't change the subject, Zach. I'm working out a payment plan as we speak. Harv will deduct the first payment from your account at the end of the month.
We'll discuss this later. Are you going to help me or not?
What do you need?
From the seat beside me, I picked up the metal glove that I took from the robotic suit of armor and held it to the screen. Can you analyze the circuitry in this glove for me? Maybe give me an idea where it came from?
What is that? 12th century armor?
13th, actually. Someone stuck a droid skeleton inside it and sent it after me.
What did you do? Volunteer them to commit their valuable time working for free without asking them first?
These guys attacked me unprovoked.
Well, I can't examine it over the net. Drop it by the lab, and I'll do a post-mortem.
Great. Now, about that forensic material that the police gave you?
Yes, I ran diagnostic analyses on the samples. They were all wine.
I knew that, Randy.
Red wine. Romani Conte, I'd suspect. Early this century, maybe? Very expensive.
Randy, did you find any poison?
Poison? Is that what I was looking for? No, there was no poison present.
None?
All the samples tested negative for all known poisons.
That can't be right.
I ran the tests twice. You can check the data if you like.
Randy, this wine killed Fora Thompson.
It what?
That's top secret. Gates, I hope this line is secure. You're alone, right?
Zach, when have you ever known me not to be alone?
Right. Sorry.
Fora Thompson's dead?
Murdered last night.
Was she the superhero?
No, that's Tua. Fora was the anarchist.
Oh, that's right. Oh, I liked her. How did she die?
That's what I'm trying to find out. All I can tell you is that she died immediately after drinking that wine.
So the fact that there is no poison in the wine...
makes absolutely no sense at all. Oh, and a nymph drank the wine and she died too.
A nymph?
A small, fairyish kind of thing. Very annoying.
Those little creatures that follow Freya?
Yeah.
I always thought those were CGI.
Apparently not. One fell into a glass of the wine and we found it dead. So you see, it has to be the wine.
Interesting. Let me run some more tests. I'll call you later.
So, Harv, do you have anything for me?
I have some background information on Tua and Thria Thompson that you might find interesting.
Let me have it.
Well, for starters, they work for Ona.
They what?
Tua's crime-fighting adventures on Intercorp HV are underwritten by a nameless third-party corporation.
What does that mean?
It means that Intercorp is netcasting the adventures, but they're not the ones paying the licensing fee.
And Ona is?
The trail is convoluted and very well hidden, but yes, it's Ona. She pays the licensing fee to Intercorp, which in turn pays Tua's production company. In exchange, Ona's company gets all subsidiary rights to Tua's show. But there are no subsidiary rights. At least none that have ever been exercised.
And Thria's show?
Similarly underwritten by another third-party corporation.
Again run by Ona?
Indeed.
Why would she fund her sister's careers when they're suing her?
Perhaps out of kindness and a sense of familial responsibility?
I needed that. I think your sense of humor is becoming more refined each day.
I have been practicing my deadpan.
You have anything else?
Here's one I heard the other day. What do you get when you cross an android lawyer and a flatulent opera singer?
No, I meant info on the Thompsons.
Oh, right. Well, I've learned that Tua currently has 74 civil suits pending against her.
From who?
Mostly patrons of buildings she has smashed up chasing criminals. Or as she prefers, evildoers.
Between those cases and her suit against Ona, I bet she has some hefty legal bills to pay.
Might that be her motive for murder?
Could be.
Well, you can ask her yourself tonight. I've managed to book you some FaceTime with her.
Great. When?
10. You'll be meeting her on the rooftop of the XSL warehouse on the west side.
The what?
Apparently, Miss Tua has some previously scheduled business to take care of around that time.
She's not going to be playing superhero, is she?
I think she'd object to your use of the word playing. I'm assuming that she'll speak more freely with you if she's in her truth and justice mode.
What am I supposed to do if she actually comes across a crime?
Yes, well, that's the interesting part.
What do you mean? I am not wearing a mask. It was 5 minutes after 10, and a damp, chilly wind was blowing through the west side, like the cold French kiss of danger. I was standing on the roof of a warehouse, overlooking a shadowy abandoned parking lot and loading dock.
It's your choice, Zach. But unless you're nigh invulnerable like me, it's a good idea to protect your secret identity when you're fighting crime.
Tua was beside me on the rooftop, her feet hovering a half a meter above the surface. Her long cape caught the breeze and billowed impressively. I don't have a secret identity.
You would if you wore a mask. You could be Justice Lad.
No.
I think it's kind of catchy.
Thankfully, Tua's camera bots weren't recording her for netcast this evening.
I suppose that you're wearing spandex is out of the question then, huh?
You got that right.
Fine, but you're not a very interesting sidekick.
I'm not a sidekick.
Can I call you the Dour Detective then?
No.
How about the damn trench coat?
How about you call me Zack? I'll answer to Super Zack if you like.
Have it your way then. It just won't be as much fun.
Sorry, Tua, but right now, fun isn't exactly at the top of my list. Now, can we talk about your sister's death?
For the first time since I'd been there, she set foot on the roof. Then she crouched low and slid into the shadows. Or at least as much into the shadows as a super-powered supermodel can.
Did Fora have any enemies?
She hated the world, Zack. I'm sure some portions of the world hated her right back.
Can you be a little more specific?
Not really. We shared the same DNA, but as you know, she and I weren't close.
The sound of a hovercraft on the nearby skyway caught her attention. She seemed disappointed when it passed without stopping.
Before last night, when was the last time you saw her?
A year ago, I think. Thria and I made a trip out to that casino in New Vegas, where she was preaching. We tried to talk some sense into her.
What kind of sense? Another hover passed on the skyway, and Tua turned her eyes toward it again.
Are we waiting for someone?
One of my informants tipped me off this afternoon. The Belgian crime syndicate is trying to establish itself here in New Frisco.
There's a Belgian crime syndicate? What do they smuggle, waffles?
They're making a weapons buy from a local arms merchant here tonight. We're going to bust up the party.
We're going to what? Shouldn't we call the police?
I want to talk to these lowlifes first. We'll let the police mop up afterward.
Why don't we let the police do the mopping? Then we can get the information we need from Captain Ricky.
These vermin won't tell the police anything. They don't fear the police. But they fear me.
I know the feeling. You didn't answer my earlier question. What kind of sense were you and Thria trying to talk into Fora?
It's a family matter.
At that nano, two very nondescript black hovercrafts entered the lot. We watched as the hovercrafts killed their lights and slowly made their way toward the loading dock.
You wanted her to join your lawsuit against Ona, didn't you?
Zack, do you know how much money Ona spends every year on shoes? Do you know what I could do with her shoe money alone?
A lot?
You're darn right. That much wealth buys a lot of justice. Daddy left Ona an unimaginable fortune. She could easily use it to make this world a better place. But Ona chooses instead to spend it on herself.
She turned back to the loading dock, just as another hover exited the skyway and floated into the lot.
Maggot number two. We'll wait until they actually make the switch before hitting them. I'll take the ones with the weapons, you handle the ones taking the payment.
Hart, net the police and let them know about this so-called arms buy.
It's already in the works, boss.
Tua was watching as men had emerged from the various vehicles and were huddled together.
Ona gives some of her wealth to charity, doesn't she?
It's a drop in the bucket. Trust me, this is not what Daddy would have wanted.
What about Thria?
Gates, she's worse than Ona. At least Ona lives on this planet. Thria's head is stuck somewhere between Avalon and the Twilight Zone.
On the dock below, one of the men pulled a pocket port from his coat and turned the small computer screen to the others, flashing his untraceable electronic cash. The men opened the first suitcase, revealing four laser rifles inside.
There's the buy. Let's go, Justice Lad.
You mean now? And don't call me that.
She grabbed my arms and wrapped them around her neck from behind.
Hang on tight and stay behind me. They're probably heavily armed.
It's a weapons buy, of course.
They're armed!
An hour later, I was sitting in Tony's office at the station house. I was wet, cold, cut, scraped, and contused in more places than I cared to think about. I wanted nothing more than to go home and feign death for the next few hours. Tony, on the other hand, was having a grand old time. I could tell because he'd ordered sushi on the way back to the station house and asked me how well I could use chopsticks and handcuffs.
Did she really call you Justice Lad?
Do I really need to keep answering that?
You're older than she is. Justice Geezer would be more appropriate. At least just this middle-aged guy.
Is there a point to this? Am I in trouble or anything?
Well, you did hit one of my officers.
Hey, he hit me first. Plus, he was buying illegal weapons. And he called me that name.
He wasn't buying weapons.
Yes, he was, Tony. I saw him. Apparently, he's part of the Belgian syndicate. I think they run guns and chocolate.
There is no Belgian syndicate. He was undercover.
Are you after the arms merchants?
There were no arms merchants. Everyone there was on the job.
Huh. You staged the buy for Tua.
Kills two birds with one shot. Keeps her out of our hair. Keeps the real crooks from being pummeled by her and then suing us for lack of protection.
She's not very subtle about it, is she?
I've lost track of the number of stings or undercover operations that she's ruined by crashing through the ceiling and beating everybody up. These are all carefully planned and orchestrated. We have a writer on staff who comes up with the overall story arc. You know, the Belgian syndicate. He works out events with me and some of the other captains. And we have the Thespian Squad perform the actual events for Tua to bust up.
The Thespian Squad?
That's top secret, by the way. So you can never repeat this story to anyone.
Yeah, like anyone would believe me. So the guy who hit me?
Got a little carried away. He's a rookie.
The Thespian Squad.
Let's go, Justice Lad. As long as you're here, there's something you should see.
Where are we going?
The morgue.
Ah, yes. The perfect end to the perfect day. Buried as far from the natural sunlight as it is, the time of day doesn't make a lot of difference in the morgue. So, I'm at a loss to explain why the morgue at night makes me even more uncomfortable than the morgue in the morning. But it does. You got a problem with that? The coroner, Lenny Shakes, was there when Tony and I arrived.
You're still here?
Death never sleeps.
So, all that eternal rest stuff?
A cruel fraud perpetrated on the masses by heartless fate.
Okay. Shake seemed a little on edge. I'm pretty certain that Tony noticed it as well, but neither of us asked him about it. Any luck with Fora's autopsy?
Who?
Case number J8675309.
Shakes shook his head sadly, then ran his fingers through his hair.
Well, we tried the mining laser this afternoon, but it couldn't pierce the skin. The residual heat melted the table and the surrounding equipment, but her body remained intact.
Wow.
Yes, wow. I don't understand it. But I'm not giving up. Not on your life. We're getting a Vodrong laser from the Ministry of Space tomorrow. It's designed to take core samples from asteroids. If it can cut the diamond-hard surfaces of ionized meteorites, hardened by the cold vacuum of space, then surely it'll cut this bitch.
What?
I mean, specimen. It will cut the skin of this specimen.
Yeah, good luck with that. Tony and I exchanged a worried glance as Shakes led us to the wall of body drawers at the far end of the room. It took him a nano to find the right drawer. Then he opened it with a two-handed heave. The drawer was built to hold a human cadaver, so when he pulled the sheet back to reveal Thria's dead nymph, the little pixie seemed hopelessly small on the big slab. Cold, still, and in a naturally pale shade of silver, if that's possible, she was a surreal, tragic sight to behold. It was like looking at a bunny or a squirrel that had been crushed by a hover. And as Tony had told me earlier, she was somehow less real than before. She was faded like an old picture, or a hologram not set for perfect resolution. How is this possible?
I don't know. We're monitoring the decay. The rate is constant. At the current speed, she should be completely gone in about 36 hours.
Is no way to slow it?
We've tried cooling the body, heating the body, adjusting the atmosphere. I even had it in a zero-grav vacuum this afternoon. The decay remains constant and unexplainable.
We've recorded it every way possible, so at least we'll have images of it for evidence. I just wanted you to see it for yourself.
I appreciate that. Shakes covered the body with a sheet, slid the drawer back into the wall, and then led us to the exit. Well, thanks again for keeping me in the loop on this, guys. It's turning into a real puzzle.
I'm still hopeful. As we say in the field, killers always leave messages behind. Our job is to find the message that says, "This is who I am."
Yeah, let me know when you run across one of those. Thanks. I couldn't help thinking that I was overlooking a crucial bit of information. The next day, I rose at Harv's insistence in mid-morning, tired, stiff, and sore.
Oh, man. How old is my body again?
Do you mean chronologically, or should I factor your abnormally high wear and tear into the equation?
I limped toward the hallway. You look different. Did you change your appearance program?
I think you should worry more about your own appearance at the Nano.
Are you taller?
Oh, for Gate's sake, just lay down on the Cairo table and get some treatment.
I'm okay. I just need to walk it off.
Ah, yes, the walking it off remedy. I just read an interesting article on that subject published this month in the Journal of Non-Existent Medicine. It was right next to the study on the cancer-fighting properties of beer and nachos.
I remember the good old days when I could get beaten up by thugs at night, grab a couple hours sleep in a breakfast burrito, and get right back at it the next day.
You had more hair then as well. On your head, I mean.
That's it. You changed your hair. Sure enough, the wispy strands of brown and gray hair on Harv's holographic head had been thickened and were slightly darker. You're not bald anymore.
I was never bald. My hairline was receding at a planned rate.
Well, it looks good.
Thank you.
Why the change?
I felt I needed a more appropriate look now that I'm taking a more active part in the investigation.
Oh, yeah. Everybody knows that hair is vital when investigating murder. Wait a nano. What's that on your jacket?
Where?
On your elbow. You have leather patches on the elbows of your jacket.
Very stylish, don't you think?
Yeah, I guess. More hair, patches on your elbows? You're starting to look... Oh, no. You're becoming a detective, aren't you?
You gave me permission to do additional research.
I was delirious.
And you asked me to be more visible during the interviews.
Around Ona's computer.
And you know how I like logic puzzles.
You like nagging me too, but that doesn't make you my mother.
Well, it can't be helped now. I've grown fond of this detective business.
Harv!
If you can be Sam Spade, why can't I be Ellery Queen?
Wait. You know who Sam Spade is?
No, boss. I have access to all the information in the world except the stuff about fictional private investigators.
This is serious stuff, you know. It's a murder investigation.
Yes, that would explain the fuss everyone's making over the dead body.
This isn't a game. It's not a riddle, and it's not some stupid exercise in logic. We're trying to catch a murderer. Elbow patches and a new hairstyle don't help us.
No matter what my appearance is at any given time, I am still one of the most intelligent processors on the planet. I'm on the case for real, boss.
I smiled ever so slightly and shook my head. Since he was stuck in my head, sharing my brain, I had no idea what effect his changes might have on me, besides, of course, making him even more annoying. Yet, it was possible that this could be a good thing. You're not going to start smoking a pipe, are you?
Oh, please, that was Holmes. I am thinking of getting an Indian houseboy, though.
You're pushing it, Harv. Harv left me alone as I showered, shaved, and dressed. But his hologram was waiting for me at the breakfast table when I came in for coffee.
You know, it would be far more efficient if you drank straight caffeine.
Efficient, yes. Tasty, no. Any chance we can meet with Thria today?
No problem. She's scheduled for this afternoon. You're meeting her in Vermont.
Vermont? Seems like a long way to go.
Longer than you think. Vermont is her mystical realm. She spells it with a Y, and according to Thria, the mystical realm predates the establishment of the state by 2 millennia. Also, Miss Thompson's computer reports that her security experts, the Fowen cousins, are back at work after being severely reprimanded.
I can imagine.
They've already given statements to the police about the incident, but we should talk to them ourselves.
Well, I agree. I guess we're going back to Ona's cigarette?
Correct. Well done. Before we do, however, I suggest you tune into Entertainment This Nano.
Another Bill Gibbon report? How bad is it?
The story is only just now being reported, but let's put it this way. The bag is now clearly Catley's, and there's a very foul odor coming from the fan.
I sat back down at the table and turned to the kitchen wall screen.
Our top story of this news cycle, and likely our only story for the entire day. Entertainment This Nano has learned exclusively that Fora Thompson, one of the world-renowned Thompson Quads, is dead. Murdered the night before last in the home of her trillionaire playgirl sister, Ona.
Aw, tweet me.
Anonymous, unnamed sources report exclusively to ETN that Fora Thompson died while in the company of her three famous sisters, Ona, Tua, and Thria Thompson, and that she was apparently poisoned. Furthermore, we have learned that the number one suspect in this crime is none other than Ona Thompson. Affectionately known to many as the Crazy Quad, Fora eschewed the public spotlight that her sisters so coveted. So, although she was world famous and adored by millions, she spent the last several years of her life in relative obscurity, preaching against the evils of the material world to a small, devoted, and decidedly low-income following in the city of New Vegas. The New Frisco police have thus far refused to comment on the murder, or the increasing public outcry that Ona Thompson be arrested and formally charged with her sister's murder. However, we at ETN are confident that our persistent requests for answers will soon be met. I'm Bill Gibbon III, and you're watching this exclusively on Entertainment This...
What does he mean by all that? There's no public outcry for Ona's arrest.
Give it time. And cue Ona. When her image appeared on the screen, Ona was already well into her angry diatribe.
Find me in the media like I'm some celebrity murderer du jour. I could squash that insignificant Gibbon Vidiot like a bug. The people who work for me could squash him like a bug. The bugs in my house could squash him like a bug. That's how insignificant he is to me.
I take it you've heard the news.
They're calling for my arrest. They're treating me like a common criminal. You're thinking about some clever wordplay on common criminal, aren't you?
What? No, I wasn't. Really.
I want you to fix this.
I don't control the media, Ona. You have a publicist, don't you?
I have several.
And put them to work. The story's out now, so start spinning your side of it.
You mean play the distraught and grieving sister?
Just don't make it seem like you're hiding anything.
I can do distraught and grieving. Maybe I should give an interview or two.
I was thinking more along the lines of issuing a statement. You don't want to jump too deeply into the feeding frenzy. The press can twist things, make you look bad. You don't want to do anything we might regret.
You mean, like, confess?
That would be a worst-case scenario. You don't think you'll, confess to this, do you?
I'm not the killer, Zack.
Good, because that would sort of change the focus of my job.
Shouldn't you be out finding the killer?
I was just leaving. The security command center of Ona's compound turned out to be a box-shaped, two-story detached building about 200 meters from the ziggurat. I say two-story detached because although the first floor was traditionally anchored to the ground, the second floor was completely detachable and fitted with low-powered hover thrusters so that it could take to the air and actually float around the compound like a high-tech maintenance blimp over a football stadium. The Fowens were both currently aboard the floating half of the building, so I had to port up, something I'm loath to do, from the first floor to the second in order to talk to them. The airborne half of the building housed the various monitors and security-related controls for Ona's home, covering various areas of the compound, as well as the surrounding perimeter. Several types of alarm system displays were laid out on a central console, and a small army of bots tended the nano-to-nano workings of it all. The Fowens acted as overseers to the bot workforce. The Fowens themselves were block-like men with sharp European features. They each had short blonde hair and menacing Chu Man Fu goatees, a new facial hair formation where the upper lip is clean-shaven while a beard is grown along both sides of the mouth and around the bottom edge of the chin, also called the hairy U, for obvious reasons. As Ona had mentioned, the two men were completely identical, right down to their heavy black boots, black band sunglasses, complete with built-in computer monitors, and knee-length faux leather jackets. One sat at a workstation scanning visual feeds from locations around the compound. He shook my hand coldly without turning away from his work. The other cousin floated outside the room, checking the strength of the force bubble that encircled the compound. He had milky white anti-grav discs attached to his boots that let him hover in the air in all positions, even upside down, and flutter from place to place like a high-tech hummingbird.
So you guys are actual identical twins?
Identical twin cousins.
Once removed.
The one outside spoke through his radio headset.
Which one of you is Sturm and which one is Drang?
Does it matter?
Not really, but humor me.
I'm Sturm.
I'm Drang.
What can you guys tell me about what happened here last night?
It was a tragic event.
Yeah, truly tragic.
Do you mind telling me where the two of you were that night?
We were out of town.
Where?
Conference.
Which one was it?
Conference.
Trade show.
Okay, a word of advice here. The police don't particularly like those kinds of answers.
It was a trade show and a conference.
I don't like them either. Drang flipped away from his place by the force bubble and barrel rolled gracefully toward the floating monitor room. He stopped himself with a hand on the window and stared at me through the glass.
That isn't really a concern for us.
Then he pushed off from the window and darted to another section of the force bubble, like a playful fish in a tank. I walked toward Sturm as he continued to scan the visual feeds and gazed gently over his shoulder. He caught sight of me out of the corner of his eye and stabbed a button on the console that scrambled the screen images. He no doubt had a descrambler built into his glasses, so while to my eyes the images on the screens were electronic garbage, they were crystal clear to his. I focused my thoughts and shot Harv a quick message.
Harv, descramble the images on the monitors for me.
It's top of the line encoding. Give me a few nanos.
I turned away from Sturm's monitors and pretended not to care.
How long have you two worked for Ona?
5 years.
63 months.
And this is your first murder?
Technically, it wasn't our murder.
It happened on your watch.
Technically, it wasn't our watch either.
It happened in the house that you're charged with protecting. How do you think the murderer was able to get past your defenses?
No one got past the defenses.
How do you figure?
Ms. Ona has made that very clear. It's our job to keep unwanted people out of the ziggurat, which we did. We can't control what goes on inside. We provide only the packaging for the snack food.
We make it airtight and seal it for freshness.
But we have no control over the snacks inside.
If someone goes crackers...
Or nuts.
Or just flakes out.
It's not the fault of the packaging.
I see. You're defending yourself with pretzel logic. Both Sturm and Drang stopped their work and turned to me. Hey, I'm not the one who started the snack food metaphor.
Okay, boss. I've cracked the scrambling algorithm, and I can calibrate the eye lens to compensate. You should be able to see the images clearly through your left eye.
I cast a quick glance toward Sturm's monitors. Sure enough, the images were clear to my left eye, and they were an interesting array of sights. The main entrance, the guard post, a line of coats on a rack, an overhead view of the compound, the hallway leading to the dining room, a 30-meter-long shoe tree, the kitchen, a swimming pool, a 4-story-high rack of designer dresses.
Every third image is clothing-related. I'm cataloging the sequence for future reference.
I nodded. So you think the murderer was someone inside the house, not an intruder?
All we're saying is that no one snuck into the compound. The murderer was either a resident or a guest.
Or an employee.
Or an employer.
You think Ona killed her sister?
We're saying no such thing.
Not officially, anyway.
All we're saying is that there was no love lost between the quads. Ona and Fora especially hated one another.
I understand that, but was there any love lost between you and the quads?
Do you have something against us, Mr. Johnson?
I don't think so. The question is, do you have something against me?
What do you mean by that?
I reached into the pocket of my trench coat and pulled out the metal glove. I was attacked yesterday in this house. Maybe the attackers were friends of yours. Sturm got up from his workstation and took the glove from me. He gently fingered its robotic innards, inspecting the workmanship. Drang floated over to the window and looked at the glove through the glass.
Oh, you think we built this?
It's up your alley, isn't it?
Oh, this isn't up our alley. This isn't even in our neighborhood.
Yeah, it's a whole other city.
Another province entirely.
Try not to stretch the metaphor too far. Just get to the point.
This technology is prehistoric. We built better stuff than this while we were still in the womb.
Sturm snapped his fingers, and half a dozen golf ball-sized metal spheres immediately flew from his workstation and hovered in the air before him.
This is the kind of bot we use today. 100 times smaller, and about 1,000 times more powerful than whatever used that metal hand.
He tossed the glove in the air. The 6 spheres buzzed after it as it flew, encircling it like a team of stunt planes. The lead sphere cast a beam of green light on the glove and stopped it at the apex of the toss. It gently spun the glove around and wiggled its fingers in a silly little wave-like motion. I took the glove from the green field and stared at the sphere as it hovered before my eyes. Impressive. Is this what you use to monitor the compound?
We have 1,300 spheres currently in use. 1,000 in the ziggurat alone. They monitor, they track, and if need be, they defend.
They're armed. I saw tiny red lights on the 5 spheres still above him flash 3 times. Then the spheres fired thin blue laser blasts at the 6th bot hovering just in front of me. Then it was gone. Minuscule gray bot ashes floated gently to the floor.
Yeah, they are very armed. If we wanted to kill you, you'd be dead. So obviously, we haven't tried to kill you. At least not yet.
I hope that's not a threat.
Just a simple statement of fact, and a simple warning.
On that note, I think you should be going now. Your being here is distracting us from our duties.
At least they didn't try to kill you. They only sort of threatened it. Which is like a day off for you.
Still, they were awful anxious to point fingers away from themselves.
You think they're covering up?
I know they are. Don't we have an appointment with Thria soon?
We're due in 40 minutes, so you better let me drive.
The entrance to Viermont was an apparent brick wall beneath a stone gargoyle in a rundown building on Mission Street. In order to activate the portal, I had to recite an incantation, which I won't repeat here because it contained a lot of touchy-feely Earth Mother stuff that would ruin my tough guy image. Suffice it to say that I had to wash my mouth out with bourbon and nails afterward. I clicked my heels together and stepped through the brick wall. A nano later, Harv's hologram and I were standing on a misty patch of moss. And for what it's worth, Harv wasn't buying the whole mystic portal act.
It's a teleporter, with preset coordinates and a voice activation system. The rest is just atmosphere.
Nice place. Any idea where we are?
Probably a soundstage somewhere.
Close to Frisco, I hope.
Strangely, I can't tell. It seems that our present location isn't registering on the GPS. There may be a cloaking system.
Or we could be out of range, like maybe in another dimension.
That's a rather quantum leap of logic.
It's been a quantum leap kind of week. Let's look around. We stepped through the thin layer of mist, and then beheld Viermont. The first thing that struck me was that it was very soft. Not the texture, but the appearance. It had that fuzzy, slightly out of focus, softcore porn look to it. And there was a lot of mist around. I had to admit, though, that the place was nice to look at, if you're into ferns and things. The forest was lush, filled with evergreen trees, moss-covered earth, and big-leafed plants. It also smelled nice. Wow, this isn't so bad. The second thing that struck me, unfortunately, was a giant reptilian tail. It swung out of the mist like a moray eel after a fish, swatting me with the blunt end of its tip, sparing me the spikes, but knocking me hard to the ground nonetheless. The moss into my armor took the brunt of the blow, but still, it was a sensation I would have preferred to live without. What was that?
A giant reptilian tail.
Is it attached to a giant reptile?
Not exactly.
What do you mean by that? Something very large was coming out of the mist. I lifted my head and turned as the vapors parted, pushed aside by the great form emerging from within. It was green and gray, 6 meters long, and carried a steamy smell of ash and brimstone. That was just the head. It's a dragon, isn't it?
I'm afraid so.
I popped my gun into hand. You know, I'm getting really tired of this medieval crap.
Actually, dragons are more mythical than medieval.
The dragon kept its head low to the ground, the majority of its body still hidden by the mist, and stretched its neck toward me slowly.
Be you a knight or an acolyte?
Neither. I'm here to seek... The dragon's tail whipped around from behind me. And knocked me again to the ground, pinning me there with its weight.
Speak in verse or feel the curse.
What was that?
Speak in verse or feel the curse.
It wants you to answer it in rhyme.
What? The tail pushed on me a little harder and drew me a couple of centimeters deeper into the moss.
One last chance, oh ignorant stranger. Then you'll be in mortal danger.
Fine. I've come to talk to Thria. Can I make that any clearer?
You'll be lucky if it doesn't squash you for that.
The dragon moved its head closer.
Your rhymes have a certain dull anointment, but is it so that you have an appointment?
Thria is expecting me. Go and ask her. You will see.
Don't command me, little man. What did they call you in your land?
Zachary Johnson is my name. Solving mysteries is my claim to fame.
Initiating vomit simulation.
The dragon pulled its head back into the mist and left me pinned to the ground beneath its tail. This is really humiliating.
You've been in more degrading waiting rooms.
Name one.
There's the DMV.
Name another. The dragon's head reappeared from the mist. It slid its tail from my back.
Mr. Johnson, you are free to enter. Ithia and Luffy will guide you to the center.
Who? Two more forms emerged from the mist. One was a winged horse that was so white it hurt my eyes to look at it. The other was a familiar-looking shrimp.
Hello, ugly male oppressor. Ready to supplicate at the dress hem of the ethereal mistress of Viermont?
Yeah, whatever. The horse folded its giant wings to its side and motioned, rather communicatively, for me to climb onto her back. I don't suppose I can just walk.
Sorry, oh ugly hairy one, but we have to traverse the scrying pools of little girl dreams, the forests of mainly tingly feelings, and the canyon of lost estrogen. Trust me, you don't want to slog through that.
I'll take your word for it. The winged horse took me and the nymph to the center of Viermont, where we found Thria on a mist-shrouded mountaintop, carefully moving several large, oddly shaped rocks about the grounds. She was laying her fingertips gently upon the kiloton-sized rocks, one at a time. At her touch, a gentle green light would emanate from her palms, the stone would be bathed in the glow,
and then just sort of rise into the air, floating a meter or two off the ground, and go wherever Thria's hand would gesture. Neat trick.
She's using hidden anti-grav apparati and some pyrotechnics.
Can you register any energy levels from the anti-grav devices?
Actually, no. They must be cloaked.
Or non-existent. I have to admit that Thria cut a very striking figure in this setting. Her gown caught the hint of breeze on the air and moved gracefully about her body, hugging its curves in places, sliding aside to reveal teasing bits of skin in others. There was a radiance to her here, making her a gentle beacon of beauty surrounded by the mist. The second of Thria's two remaining nymphs buzzed busily about her mistress's head, doing no discernible work as far as I could tell.
It's a pleasure to see you again, Zachary. How go things in the land beyond the mist?
Not so good, I'm afraid. Word is out about Fora's murder. And there's some pressure to charge Ona with a crime.
Surely they don't think she could have done such a thing.
I have no evidence at this point. I don't even know for certain how Fora died. But there's still some pressure, mostly from the media.
Do you think she's innocent?
What I think doesn't matter. It's what I can prove that's important. What's with all the rocks?
They're druid stones. I'm positioning them to form a scrying portal, to let me glimpse the future. I've cast the runes several times since Fora's death.
Find anything interesting?
Alas, all I can see is darkness. A great cold void, bereft of all light, joy, and life. I think the stones must be out of alignment or something.
Yeah, let's hope so. I was never fond of voids.
So I'm trying a new configuration. You don't mind if I cast a rune while we chat, do you?
It's not gonna turn me into a toad or anything.
No. You serve us better as a man than as a toad. For now.
Go right ahead, then. She turned back to the stones and lifted one with the green glow. I just want to check a few things with you, if that's all right.
Of course.
It was Ona who invited you all to dinner the night of the murder, correct?
Well, I don't know about the others, but Ona contacted me 3 nights before and invited me to her home. She said it was time that we put the past behind us and mended mountains.
You mean mended fences?
We never did fences in our family. Things were always on a grander scale.
A nymph buzzed past my ear. I waved it away like I would a mosquito. So, Ona brought you all together to talk about a settlement?
I'm sure that settling the legal disputes was part of it. But I like to think that she wanted us to be a family again. Perhaps that is naive of me.
It's a nice thought, nonetheless. The other nymph flew right up to my face, spun around, and mooned me.
Na 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 na.
I took a swipe at her. You know the police found your third nymph dead at the crime scene. Did they tell you?
Yes. Poor LeFou. She was such a little spitfire.
Odd thing, though. She seems to be fading away. Any idea why that is?
She's returning to the magic from whence she came.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But I guess the police figure that's a little hard to put in an evidentiary report.
You never answered my question, Zachary. Do you believe that Ona's innocent?
It's my job to believe that, Thria. My question to you is, do you believe it? Thria set another stone into place and stared forlornly into the distance.
I love my sister, but I must admit at times she is a shrewd, manipulating she-bitch. Still, I hope with all my heart for her innocence.
I sat down on one of the smaller rocks and tried to stare out at the landscape, but the mist around the hilltop was too thick to see much of anything. No offense, Menthria, but if she goes to trial, I doubt we'll use you as a character witness.
I despise my sister's lifestyle.
Why is that exactly? She sat gently beside me.
She demeans herself with her celebrity. She could do so much with her natural abilities, her fortune. It's just very wasteful of her.
What about Tua? What do you think of her?
Tua means well, but I think she's more naive than any of us. Do you really think that anyone thinks of her as a hero? She's a circus performer. She's not as bad as Ona, but she's wasting her life as well.
And Fora? Were you very close to her?
Sadly, no. Not since Daddy died. Fora is perhaps the greatest tragedy of us all.
How do you mean?
Fora was always so full of spirit and wonder. I always thought that she would be the one of us to really change the world. Well, then Daddy died, and she became, well, odd.
Prior to the night of the murder, when did you see her last?
Tua and I visited her in New Vegas. Such a horrid place. She wasn't particularly friendly then. She just wanted to be left alone with her followers. Fora's flock, we called them. My, what a truly sad family we have become.
All families have their problems, Thria. Your family just happens to do everything, good or bad, on a grand scale.
You are a good man, Zachary.
How did Fora get along with Ona?
Fora despised her, of course. Always being waited on by servants and bots. Fora thought that was so decadent.
Wasn't that a bit hypocritical, coming from somebody who had her own followers? I assume they waited on her.
Fora felt her followers did her bidding because they wanted to, not because she paid them.
Paid servant or mindless slave? Are they really that different? Aside from their tax brackets.
Fora thought so.
Well, I'll let you get back to the future-looking thing. I'll let you know if anything comes up in the real world. I mean, you know, Frisco.
I appreciate that, Zachary. Let me know if you need anything else from me.
I stared out at the mist surrounding the mountains. I drew my coat tighter about me. There is one thing, actually.
Yes?
I'm gonna need a ride down from this mountain. Any chance you could call me a cab or something? Once back in the real world, something Thria had said suddenly struck a chord in my mind. I needed to talk to Ona, so Harv netted Ona's computer to set up some more FaceTime between the two of us. Her schedule was tight, as you might imagine, but the computer agreed to squeeze me in between appointments. I was happy to see that proving her innocence was such a high priority. So late that day, Harv and I returned to Ona's and met with her in her office, which was at the absolute center of the ziggurat. Now, I've been in large offices before, but Ona's office was different. I don't see a ceiling.
The ceiling is platinum in color, and fashioned to simulate the ornate tin ceilings found in early 20th century architecture.
How come I can't see it?
Because it's high.
High?
107 meters, at the pinnacle of the ziggurat.
Why would anyone want a ceiling that high?
An architectural conversation piece, I suppose. This office holds the record for being the highest ceilinged single room on Earth.
They keep track of those things?
You know better than to ask me that, don't you?
I guess so.
By the way, don't drop anything of import into her wastebasket. It's 3 kilometers deep.
Zach, over here!
Harv and I met her at the desk. Thanks for meeting with us, Ona. Ona sat back at her desk and straightened her outfit, a very white low-cut jacket over a pale blouse, as a pair of tiny grooming bots hovered around her head. One quickly combed her hair, the other touched up her makeup. It was only then that I noticed the camera bot, floating just in front of her desk.
I'm heeding your advice and taking my case to the court of public opinion.
You're giving interviews?
Not full-length interviews, of course. Just splinterviews.
Splinterviews?
They're very short interviews, commonly used by most short-cycle news services. One question, one response, usually no more than 50 words.
How many have you done?
Number 115 is scheduled for 20 seconds from now. Pardon me, Zach. Computer, which one is this?
Alyssa Salissa from Rapid News. This one is to share your grief.
Ugh, grief. I've been doing grief all afternoon. What about righteous indignation?
That's next interview.
Thank Gates for that. I'll be with you in a nano, Zachary.
She slid her earpiece into her ear, adjusted the tiny microphone on her collar, turned back to the camera bot, and transformed herself into a grieving sister. The change was startling to behold. She suddenly looked like a woman who'd been crying for 2 days, but who had somehow heroically pulled herself together to talk exclusively to her dear friend, fill-in interviewer's name here.
Yes, Alyssa. Thank you and your viewers so much for your concern. I'm still in shock over Fora's tragic death. I appreciate your thoughts and wishes, and I'm just so grateful that you've chosen to respect the privacy of our family during this difficult time.
And we're out.
Good. How'd that look to you, Zach?
Was that the interview?
Splinterview, please try to keep up. Did my grief read as genuine to you?
Probably.
How long until the next one?
75 seconds.
Plenty of time. Now, Zach, how can I help you?
I wanted to talk to you again about the night of Fora's death. I'm still not certain how Fora died, but I want to talk a little bit about the wine, since that's the current focus. You chose the bottle, right?
That's correct.
When?
Earlier that evening, perhaps an hour before my sisters arrived.
You brought it upstairs yourself?
Yes. No one else has access to the wine cellar.
Okay. You chose the wine, you brought it upstairs. Did you bring it into the dining room yourself? Ona thought for a few nanos as the grooming bots once again retouched her hair and makeup.
No, of course not. That's what server bots are for. I only had an hour to make myself look even more spectacular than usual.
So you didn't see the wine from the time you gave the bottle to that bot until you and the others entered the room?
Of course not. I trust my bots know how to properly carry wine.
And that was about an hour, you said?
A little more, perhaps.
I want to see that bot. I want surveillance visuals of its movements from the nano it took the bottle.
Done.
Good. We'll scan them tonight and look for anything.
No, boss. I mean done and done. I just scanned the visuals. Miss Thompson's computer gave them to me.
Already?
I'm a supercomputer.
Did you find anything?
Nothing. The bot brought the wine to the dining room and set it on the table as W was finishing the table setting.
Did W touch it?
He never came near it. He did the last of the silverware, then he left. The bottle sat undisturbed until Miss Thompson and her sisters arrived that evening.
Tweet me. Una, do you...
Next split of you in 10 seconds.
Hold that thought, Zach. Which one is this?
Alvin Calvin of World Entertainment News.
And this is Righteous Indignation?
Correct.
Good. My indignation comes a lot more naturally than my grief.
No kidding.
Alvin, Forrest's short life ended less than 2 days ago. And yet I've been forced to relive that awful night every nano since then by poorly dressed vultures posing as journalists trying to create a story on the infrastructure of my grief. After everything I've done for this world, after all the good that I've created with my wealth, aiding underprivileged children, funding disease research, driving programs for environmental renewal and reinvention, after devoting my vast fortune to raising the quality of life for every downtrodden person in the first through fourth worlds, I think I'm entitled to better treatment than this. Sorry, Zach. I have 2 minutes until the next one. What else do you need? Zachary?
We need to prove that nothing happened to the wine while it was in your possession. Computer, can you give Harv the visuals of Ono selecting the wine from the cellar?
I'm afraid not, Mr. Johnson.
Why not?
The wine cellar is a technology-free zone. There are no surveillance cameras, and I assume that the computer cannot monitor that particular room either.
That's correct. I've never seen the wine cellar, so to speak.
Why is it technology-free?
It was part of Daddy's design. He said that the electromagnetic energy from computers spoiled the wine.
So, we can prove that nothing happened to the wine once it left your hands, but we have nothing to prove that you didn't tamper with it while you were in the cellar?
Other than my word.
Ona, I don't think you fully grasp what's going on here.
Oh, good! The poll numbers are in.
You're taking a poll?
Just a quick check on the effect that the splinter views are having on public opinion.
Ona, I don't think it's appropriate for you to be taking poll numbers at this time.
Ah, 84% of all respondents find me sympathetic. That's up dramatically since this morning.
It makes you seem a little callous.
79% of all respondents feel that I am being unfairly persecuted because of my celebrity.
And more interested in protecting your own position than in finding your sister's killer.
It's nice to see that you're looking out for my best interests, Zach. Don't worry. Nobody knows I'm the one taking the polls.
Ona, this isn't a game.
No, of course not. But you know as well as I do that this is just as much about control of public opinion as it is about who is right and who is wrong. The public doesn't have time to think about the facts. They want to be told what to think. I'm innocent, Zach, so I see no problem using all my resources to tell that to the world.
I could feel a moral ambiguity headache coming on. Just try not to go too overboard, Ona. Nobody wants to see you flaunting your wealth and power.
Don't worry, Zach. I'll do what I do well. You do what you do well. Now, if you don't mind, I have another meeting with my public.